Item nine, Mr. and Mrs. John Kirkpatrick.
We can slow down, we're just looking through this thing too fast.
When's dinner coming, by the way?
I think it's on order.
I thought you ordered it.
Then we're out of it, though.
Mr. Badger.
Well, unlike the one before, Mr. and Mrs. Kirkpatrick have been very cooperative right from the get-go. Kirkpatrick's request authorization contains an unpermitted 27-foot by 12-foot closed-sided one-story dock house over a portion of their pier situated adjacent to their property along Chesnessex Creek in Accomack County. The applicants have also applied to retain a reconstructed private pier that now exceeds the statutory exemption under 28.2.1203A5, which is the section where the pier, private pier exemptions are. This is the Eastern Shore, stem of it, 13th, 10th of Anancock, and the creek just north of Anancock Creek is Chesnessex Creek. A little closer view, Project Kirkpatrick's farm is on the north side of Chesnessex Creek, approximately 2.3 miles northwest of the town of Anancock. Closer view, this is a 2009 aerial showing Chesnessex Creek. And those of you that are familiar with the area, this is Schooner Bay subdivision, south side Chesnessex and north side Chesnessex. Again, a little closer view, Kirkpatrick's home and pier, and their farm continues all the way from here back and continues out beyond the picture back here. A little closer view, there's approximately 560 linear feet along the shorefront, riparian shorefront here, and the pier in question is here, the L-head and the closed-sided structure is right here. On May 4th of 2011, we received a joint permit application from the Kirkpatricks to replace and expand their existing pier and a small platform on the landward end of their pier adjacent to their bulkhead. The existing T-head would remain the same, and the JPA drawing shows, there it is, what they wanted to do was basically just remove the stem of the pier and expand it from 5.5 to 6 feet, and the platform that's adjacent to their bulkhead, expand that from 13 to 14 feet wide and from 7 to 10 feet in this area here. What caught my attention was this little area here, which was done by the applicant's contractor, showing a boathouse. Well, in a lot of cases, boathouses on the Eastern Shore may be other things besides boathouses. They could be other structures. I don't think that was any intention by the applicant or their contractor to disguise the closed-sided structure. I just think it was just showing that there was a structure there. But what concerned us was this 10-foot little area here. So I did do a site visit on May 16th of last year to inspect the project and determine, and we determined that there was a 12-foot by 27-foot structure, closed-sided dock house on the T-head and within VMRC's jurisdiction. We sent a letter to the Kirkpatricks on May 24th of last year asking them to provide any permit information they may have relating to the construction of the dock house. We also asked for plan view and cross-sectional drawings of the dock house and decking and the date of the dock house, the date the dock house was constructed. This is my May 16th site visit and showing all of the dimensions and so forth. There's approximately 896 square feet of decking, and the dock house itself is 324 square feet here that's enclosed. We received drawings on August 12th of 2011 from the Kilpatricks. And we had been in contact for the last 2 months prior to this by phone, talking about whether or not there was a permit, what we needed, and also I was in contact with their attorney, Mr. Paulson, during that period too. Anyway, in their letter, which was dated August 11th, Mr. Kilpatrick stated that the pier and platform had since been replaced and that they did not have a permit for the dockhouse. He also stated that the dockhouse started out as an open-sided roof structure in the mid-70s and was enclosed in the late 70s or early 80s to keep out the bugs. Mr. Kilpatrick continued by stating a decision to build the dockhouse was not planned. It just evolved over the years, and if they had thought it needed a permit back then, they would have applied for it. The Kilpatricks hope that the commission will allow them to keep the structure given the many years it has been in existence and the fact that it is situated over their existing pier. This is just the plan view showing the height being 14 feet above the pier itself, and this side view showing the dockhouse and so forth. We did issue a notice to comply on October 27th of last year. Instead of removal, in lieu of removal of the dockhouse and the restoration of the pier at this time, staff agreed to withhold further enforcement pending commission review and action on the review of the application. These were taken at my site visit on May 16th before the pier was reconstructed, and you can see the dockhouse in a little closer view, the air conditioning unit, and the actual level of the first floor is up above, it looks like about a foot and a half to 2 feet above the L-head or T-head. Again, another view. This was taken September 9th on another site visit that I went to, and you can see it's been completed. Now it's 6 feet wide, and the platform here has been extended a little bit, just exactly what the application had called for. This would not have been requiring a permit had it been 6 feet all the way back to the bulkhead. The way we and staff interprets the code, anything over 6 feet as it leaves the shoreline that's not a T-head or an L-head or an appendage does not qualify for the pier exemption. So because of this portion right here, all of this needed to be permitted. Another shot looking down at the air conditioning unit there. Not sure why these poles were put in here, but these were put in after or during the reconstruction of the pier. I'm assuming the intent originally was to probably put a deck around here. It was not built, and I don't know if the Kilpatricks have any intentions of doing anything with these poles or not. And on October 17th, Mr. Kilpatrick and I went to the site, and he let me in the dockhouse and to take a few pictures. You can see there's a TV, gas stove, windows. It's very nice. Looking in the other direction, down at the kitchen end, a refrigerator, microwave, looks like a stovetop oven. If you look real close, it appears to be a faucet here, and I assume a sink. I did not realize it was one there on the site visit. But because of that, we did contact the health department, and they stated that if there is any gray water created from the dockhouse, then the water would need to be either pumped back into the homeowner septic system or the drain would need to be permanently plugged. I've not asked Mr. and Mrs. Kilpatrick what is happening with the water at this time. I'm sure they're here and they'll explain it. And we do have health department personnel here to answer any questions about that also. Again, this is before, this is after. When they applied, they had no idea that all of this was going to get involved with the application. They thought they were just adding on and widening their dock a little bit. We did receive a letter from Mr. and Mrs. Kirkpatrick dated May 9th of this year. In the letter, the Kirkpatrick state that they were willing to remove an abandoned crab shed that is located on Chestnut Creek if the commission allows them to retain their dock house. They got a contractor to give them a quote on the removal of the dock house, and it was approximately $10,000, of the old abandoned crab shed, which is right here, and the Kirkpatrick's home is down here. This is the South Side County Pier and North Side County Pier, and you can see there are other structures in this area. And all these structures have been there since the 40s in some fashion. And this is the abandoned crab shed that the Kirkpatricks are willing to dismantle if the commission would allow them to keep their structure. It's important to note that should the commission decide to accept the applicant's offer to remove the old crab shed structure as a form of mitigation, 28.2.12.10A of the code requires the commission to try to identify the owner of the crab shed, and only after a diligent search, then the commission may have the property removed after having noticed in the paper for one time. We have done a little bit of search on that crab house because we had a complaint about it back in June of 2011, and I turned it over to our law enforcement people, and they did some research. The bottom line is Pruitt family built it in 1941. It was a crab shed or crab house in the 80s and 90s. A guy named Morris Pruitt died, who supposedly sold it to somebody from up north. Don't know, for $4,000, have no idea who that person was. And there was another lead, another Mr. Howard Taylor, who lives in the general area. There was some question whether or not he was the owner, and he said no, he didn't buy it. He's been there for 25 years, but he didn't buy the property. So in reality, we don't know who owns it.
Hesitate to ask whether it's King's Grant.
I think we're okay on that, unless John knows something that I don't know, which he probably does, though. This is a picture that the Kirkpatrick sent me, and I believe sent all of you a packet in the mail, and yours are better than this one. But Accomack County was unable to locate a building permit for the structure, but they have stated that they do not plan to take any action concerning the lack of a permit since the structure is over 30 years old. The application has been subjected to a public interest review. No state agencies have commented other than the health department, and there is no protest on the project to date. This is just some more, very similar to what I took, but I thought we better put them in here since the Kirkpatricks made it part of the record. Actually, I think Joanne, did you clean before the pictures were taken?
Probably did.
And that's my last slide there. And our summary and recommendation is quite long. I can cut through some of it if you'd like. I'll start off anyway. When reviewing proposals to build over state-owned submerged land, the Commission's Subaqueous Guideline directs staff to consider, among other things, the water dependency and the necessity for the proposed structure. When considering authorization for structures for private use, 28.2.1205 of the Code stipulates that, in addition to other factors, the Commission shall also consider the public and private benefits of the proposed project and shall exercise its authority under this section consistent with the public trust doctrine as defined by the common law of the Commonwealth adopted pursuant to 1-20 of the Code in order to protect and safeguard the public right to the use and enjoyment of subaqueous lands of the Commonwealth held in trust by it for the benefit of the people as conferred by the public trust doctrine and the Constitution of Virginia. And the Commission has wrestled with this issue of structures built over water and the concept of water dependency for years. In fact, the commission's first tobacco guideline developed in 1979 stated the commission would consider the water dependency of the project and alternatives for reducing any anticipated adverse impacts. At the July 22, 2003 meeting, the commission considered and adopted a definition of water dependency that had been recommended by the commission's Habitat Management Advisory Committee. That definition subsequently included in the Sylvacus guidelines adopted by the commission in 2005. The definition states, as defined by the commission, water dependency means those structures and activities that must be located in, on, or over state-owned submerged lands. When applying this definition, both the following questions must be answered affirmatively. One, is it necessary that the structure be located over water? And two, is it necessary that the activity associated with the structure be over the water? Use of this definition for the water dependency does not necessarily preclude issuance of any permit for non-water dependent structures over state-owned submerged lands. At a public hearing, the commission may determine that while a structure is not water dependent, it is a reasonable use of state-owned submerged lands. These types of projects are evaluated on a case-by-case basis. We've had a couple of cases that went in front of the I'll just go through it. In at least two cases, the Evelyn versus the Commonwealth of Virginia back in October 2005 and the Palmer versus Commonwealth of Virginia back in April of 2006, the Virginia Court of Appeals has affirmed the Circuit Court's decision upholding VMRC's decision requiring removal of unpermitted structures that have been constructed on private non-commercial piers. In the Evelyn case, the Court of Appeals held that the governing statutes limit a riparian owner's right such that he may, The governing statute limits a riparian owner's right such that he may build without a permit only those structures necessary and essential to the placement of a private pier for the limited purpose of accessing navigable water. Riparian owner may not build without a permit incidental appendages designed merely to enhance the property primary purpose of the pier. In this case, there was an unpermitted 10-foot by 24-foot roof slash deck with stairs over the pier's T-head. In the Palmer case, which involved the construction of an unauthorized 12-foot by 11-foot storage shed at the end of his pier, the Court of Appeals affirmed the Circuit Court's decision upholding the Commission's order to remove the shed from his pier. In this case, the Court of Appeals concluded that the evidence was significant to support the Commission's denial of the after-the-fact application request, specifically referenced the Evelyn case, the public trust doctrine, the Commission's Sylvacus guidelines, and their water-dependent definition. It is also important to note that the Commission considers projects on a case-by-case basis and factors other than water dependency are considered during the deliberation. Back in 1999, this was a case that was from the Eastern Shore, and Mr. Polson represented the Fairhursts in this particular case. The commission initially denied an after-the-fact application to retain a 16-foot by 10-foot closed structure building on their pier without prior authorization. The project was appealed to the Circuit Court and remanded back to the Commission for reconsideration. It was subsequently approved by the Commission at its October 23, 2001 meeting with triple fees and a civil charge in lieu of further enforcement action. The project was considered prior to the Commission's adoption of their water dependency definition. The lieu of fee, I think, was $600 in that particular case. And again, back in on December 20th of 2005, the Commission approved an after-the-fact request for Mrs. Siegel to retain an enclosed living area constructed within the boathouse. Commission approval was conditioned upon a prohibition of overnight occupancy and sleeping, heating and air conditioning, cooking appliances, running water, and a fireplace. The approval was also conditioned upon the applicant and contractor's agreement to pay a civil charge in lieu of further enforcement action. In that case, I believe the civil charge was between the two was $15,000. And that brings us up to 2006, when the General Assembly amended 28.2-1205A. Again, that's the section of the code that deals with private piers, to provide a permit exemption for the construction of open-sided roof, sheltered roofs and gazebo structures measuring less than 400 square feet on private non-commercial piers, provided they are not prohibited by the locality and the adjoining riparian property owner does not object to the proposal. By doing so, the General Assembly appears to have expressed their opinion that such structures are reasonable amenities to a private non-commercial pier in cases which in cases where such structures are allowed by local ordinance and the neighbors have not objected. Most recently, staff has issued permits for the installation of screens in such structures, provided solid walls are not constructed and objections from the public have not been received. In the staff's opinion, that the mere installation of screening does not significantly affect the view through the statutory authorized open-sided structures, and they are allowed by allow the greater enjoyment of the structure for the property owner. The Kirkpatricks have suggested to the commission a unique mitigation plan, which is the removal of the abandoned crab shed. However, staff cannot support their request. We believe the after-the-fact project should stand on its own merits. It is important to note that should the commission decide to accept the applicant's offer to remove the crab shed, abandoned crab shed structure as some form of mitigation, again, 28.2-1210A of the code would suggest that we've got to do diligence to find the owner and then run it in the paper, local paper, one time. Replacement and expansion of Mr. and Mrs. Kirkpatrick's existing pier and a small platform on the landward end of the pier adjacent to the bulkhead exceeds the statutory exemption under 28.2-1203A5 of the code. Nevertheless, staff could have administratively authorized the pier reconstruction and deck expansion. However, since the pier and platform were constructed before a permit was issued, staff believes even the approval of this portion of the project should require triple permit fees and a minimum civil charge. Again, the only thing that made it so that it wasn't exempt was this little piece right here. The rest of this portion met the exemption. With respect to the enclosed living area at the channelward end of the pier, staff continues to find it difficult to endorse this type of non-water dependent project or to recommend its after-the-fact retention, even though the structure has been there for 30 years or more. Section 28.2-1203A5 of the code now confers authority to construct open-sided sheltered roofs or gazebo structures on private piers, provided the structures do not exceed 400 square feet and the adjacent property owners do not object. The Kirkpatrick's dock house does not exceed the 400 square feet, and the project is not protested. Therefore, the roof alone could be authorized under the above section, code section, provided the sides were removed. If the sides were removed, staff could then also support the installation of screens in the open-sided roof structure. Accordingly, in light of the Commission's decision to define water-dependent activities and structures, legislative changes regarding the extent of reasonable size structures over piers, and court decisions related to non-water-dependent structures, staff recommends that the Commission deny the after-the-fact request to retain the enclosed living space and direct the complete removal of the dock houses, closed sides, and all non-water-dependent utilities, equipment, and appliances within 30 days. Staff recommends after-the-fact approval of the pier replacement and a small platform with a triple permit fee, given the after-the-fact nature of the request and contingent on the applicant's agreement to pay a civil charge of $1,000 based on minimum degree of impact and minor degree of deviation in lieu of further enforcement action. If the sides of the dock house are removed, as recommended, staff further recommends that the Commission authorize the screening of the remaining open-sided structure. And finally, Should the commission decide to allow any or all of the enclosed living space to remain, we recommend such decision be conditioned upon the Kilpatrick's agreement to pay a civil charge of $9,000 based on moderate degree of impact and major degree of deviation. The civil charge would be in lieu of any other enforcement action. And Kilpatrick's are here, and their attorney, Mr. Polson.
Mr. Badger, when you were reading the staff final recommendation, you indicated a desire to for complete removal within 30 days.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And I'm wondering if wanted 90 days.
90, I'm sorry.
Okay. Just for clarification.
That's the only mistake I made. I'm happy.
Good. Questions of Mr. Badger?
Mr. Palmer?
Are there any other dock houses around there?
I'm sure there are. I've got one in Chincoteague I'm working on right now.
I mean, the immediate area.
Not dock houses. There are crab sheds at the creek that are in the creek.
Right.
I'm not familiar with any other
dock
houses.
Okay.
So, you know, Mr. Polson, I'm sure he's gone looking, and he may have found some. Okay.
Any further questions? All right. Thank you, Hank. Mr. Polson. Afternoon.
And it is afternoon. I first wanted the commission to know that the last time I saw Mr. Kugelman, he and I were arms in arms together trying to keep Mr. Bender from beating up on Mr. Bowman.
Yes, sir, we did.
So we were together on that one. I represent Mr. and Mrs. Kirkpatrick in this matter. And everything should reflect on this application, John, J-O-H-N. Apparently the contractor used J-O-N for some reason or the other. Not that I'm infamous on the Eastern Shore. I guess he just misspelled John, whatever the case may be. The initial point that I want to make to you, not judging the last case, but listening to the last case, as Mr. Badger pointed out to you, Mr. and Mrs. Kirkpatrick have been totally cooperative and totally responsive to staff in this matter, and I do think that is of considerable importance. Mr. Kirkpatrick is here, as Mrs. Kirkpatrick. You have a letter from him, which I'd like to introduce as an exhibit, Mr. Travel said.
Sure.
And I would like to ask Mr. Kirkpatrick to testify briefly to perhaps supplement that letter, again, noting the fact that you all had a long afternoon. So if I may, please.
Let me swear you in, Mr. Kirkpatrick. You solemnly swear the testimony you'll give be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Okay,
very briefly.
I'll just have your name for the record.
John Kirkpatrick. Thank you. And your residence, Mr. Kirkpatrick?
18192 Robin Zane, Trinidad County.
And you, of course, are married to Mrs. Kirkpatrick, who is here.
Right.
Your age?
72.
Okay. You're a small business owner on the Eastern Shore, as well as a farmer?
Yes, right.
This particular property.
Ms. Paulson.
Move it a little bit?
Yeah, let me ask you. Yeah, see, that's the microphone there. We need to. Yeah, that'll work, I think. Thank you.
This particular property, as is shown by the slides, this is basically rural-type property. It's not urban property, anything of that nature.
Correct.
And I believe you have, 560 feet of waterfront there.
Correct.
It would appear from the slides that basically you're kind of up at the head of Chestnut Creek.
Correct.
Is there any fishing, crabbing, oystering, clamming, or any boat traffic, either commercial or recreational, up in the area where you are?
Very little, because it's about 100 feet past that place, you go to 2 or 3 feet of water, and that's it.
So no activity?
No commercial fishing or crabbing or anything.
Your dock house does not preempt any other uses of the bottom up in that area or anything?
Correct.
Now, of course, you wrote the commission by your letter of May the 9th. And in that, you indicated you purchased the property, in 1971?
Correct.
Had an existing dock at that point in time.
Correct.
Redid the dock in 74 after you did work on the house.
Correct.
And lengthened it in 75 and added the T to the M.
Correct.
And then in late 70s, early 80s, you added what eventually came to be the dock house.
That's correct, yeah.
What led to the dock house?
My mother-in-law, she loved to come sit on the dock in the evening and kept complaining of bugs and what have you. So we started there, we just put like an A-frame, and over the years added to the A-frame, and eventually ended up with what we have now.
You had two daughters.
Two daughters.
Have marine equipment stored in there also, life preservers, water skis,
during the time they were home, that's correct.
Okay. You didn't make a permit back to the MRC back in the 70s or 80s, why not?
Didn't know anything about permits. Very little, wasn't a whole lot of that sort of thing going on, and never occurred to me to get one. Mainly, if for no other reason, we didn't decide to build a dock house, it just kind of evolved over the years.
Now, there was a time when you thought you had to have a BMRC permit for another project you were doing at your farm.
Some ditch work.
And did you apply?
I applied.
And found out you didn't have to have it?
That's correct.
Okay. So you weren't simply ignoring the permit procedure?
That's correct.
At the time, okay. Now, in the spring of 2011, you wanted to do some additional work to your dock.
Correct.
Hired a professional marine class A contractor.
That's correct.
He made the applications.
Correct.
The boathouse, dock house was obviously shown on the application.
Correct.
I take it you probably wouldn't have made an application, probably wouldn't have done the work if you saw what this was going to end up as.
That's true, that's correct. Okay.
But obviously you weren't trying to hide anything from anybody. Okay. At this point, what is you, Mr. Kirkpatrick's cost in this dock house?
Probably $35,000-$40,000.
Any sewage or bathroom facilities in it?
No.
You've indicated, and you thought it was a concern, and you sent it to the commission. As you indicated, you farm, among other things, and try to be a good steward of the land, and
that was the purpose in
of showing these
filters. Filter strips.
Introduce that, please, Mr. Travis. Now, this proposal, Southside Chesconessics is west of you, correct?
Correct.
And there's the old abandoned crab shed out there.
Correct.
And this was your idea, right?
That's correct.
Okay. And basically what you were suggesting, and I put it in terms of, it's not in terms, if you grant the permit, we'll do this. It's in the terms of, this would possibly be good mitigation if you did grant a permit. That's the way we were trying to phrase it. This thing has deteriorated over the years.
Correct.
In the middle of the harbor.
Correct.
Okay, and as we've heard from Mr. Badger, there's been some complaints about it. You, in fact, as mitigation, would be amenable to removing it and paying for its removal.
Correct.
And actually secured a contract on it, which I believe is $10,600. Yeah. Answer any questions that the commission may have.
Questions of Mr. Paulson or Mr. Kirkpatrick? Mr. Tankard.
Mr. Kirkpatrick, the crab picking facility that was there, how much bigger is that than your dock house?
I haven't measured it, but it looks very similar to me.
Okay.
And considerably more hollow, a lot of time, than the old float used to be.
Okay.
Other questions? Saying now, do you have anyone else who's to speak on this?
Yes, this is Kirkpatrick. We simply verify what Mr. Kirkpatrick has said, Mr. Travis did.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Is there anyone here to speak in opposition to?
I would like to make some additional comments.
Oh, okay.
Today, please, sir.
Sure.
The as Hank referred, Hank kind of talked about some of the history with what we call dock houses. Here referred to as boat houses, dock houses, or whatever kind of terms used interchangeably, though obviously they shouldn't be, but they are as a practical matter. And I was over with the commission in 2001. And at that point in time, I represented the Firehurst. And if I may please, I'm going to give you all a set of pictures and envelopes of, say, 9 or 10 cents here. These all, and I'm going to refer to them if I may.
Two more.
There you go. And the first photograph that is shown in there, which we'd like to offer as an exhibit, is actually the Firehurst dock house that was approved by the commission. And one of the circumstances that the commission looked at in this particular case was the fact that it was kind of up towards the head of the creek, just as the Kirkpatrick situation is on Chestnut Creek. This was a creek south of Hancock, but again, its location wasn't in a traveled area, wasn't anything going on up there a whole lot, and that was that particular thing. During that period of time, we looked at dock houses around the bay. I actually went to the Pagan River, among other things. And the picture, two pictures here, the Exhibit 6, this is on the western shore of the Pagan River. This was a permit granted by the commission. It's kind of hard to see from the aerial, but what it is an octagonal dock house. Had everything in it from fireplaces to ice boxes to you name it. The second picture shows its proximity to the Smithfield plant there. Commission granted that particular permit. Mr. Bowman, in fact, told me after the hearing that day, said that the owner of that dock house was a fellow that had the contract with Red Lobster to supply scallops. So he was well able to afford it, to say the least. And I remember my comments at that point in time that it's obviously not a boat house, because that boat surely couldn't get in that dock house, to say the least. Looked like a 90-foot yacht part next door to it. The other photograph, 7, is just a existing dock house that exists on the shore. As is 8. 9 is actually one that's about 300 yards south of my property. Belongs to a fellow named Herbert Barnes. This was actually permitted by the commission some years ago. My understanding now is it would be exempt. It's permitted by statute now, but it was permitted by the commission years ago. And then number 10, which I do want to talk about, is the Siegel boathouse, dockhouse. This was a matter that came before the commission in November of 05 and December 05, which was referenced by Mr. Badger in his report. And you have the pictures in your packet. There is a third picture which is not included in the packet, which again is an exterior view of the dock house. And this one was quite interesting. And I had the minutes from those two meetings, which were provided, which I'd like to introduce as an exhibit. And in lieu of reading them, I will simply summarize them and say this. It would be a gross understatement of fact to say that the scope and use of the project was grossly misrepresented to the commission and others.
this thing started in 2001, and it was to be a roof boathouse with a cost of $28,000. It got administrative approval, as it could be. There was a later complaint, and then it was determined that it had been built to a size of 36 by 44 with elaborate living quarters on the second floor for a cost of $175,000. It was approved by the commission on the condition of no overnight sleeping, heating, air conditioning, cooking, or appliances. Mr. Schick, you may well remember that you voted no because of what you characterize as the clear deception by the applicant and her agents, according to the minutes of that particular meeting. And, of course, the most recent thing, and I don't have the minutes, all I have is a newspaper clipping, but you granted a permit for the back deck bar and cafe on a 4-1 vote at your last meeting. If I understand the situation on that, again, I don't have the minutes, just what I read in the newspaper. And, of course, as you well know, anything you read in the newspaper is always accurate. But nevertheless, it was my understanding that it was a 2004 permit to build a seafood receiving deck on State Bottom. It was a condition of the permit that that's what it was supposed to be. And then last year, staff inadvertently observed a brand new structure which changed and was now a bar and cafe. Wasn't any fish receiving, apparently expressly violated the terms of the original permit, but the commission gave an after-the-fact permit. And I don't have any problem with that, to be quite candid with you. But basically the situation, as you read the staff report, number one, doesn't have to be water dependent. That doesn't kill it one way or the other. The commission over the years has looked at circumstances. I think Mr. Joseph in one hearing mentioned the fact, well, you need to find some circumstances based that are somewhat differentiated from other things. That was a discussion in the matter that I was in, the Fairhurst matter. Mr. Burkett, who was on the commission at that point, pointed out, well, the place that he was referring to where the commission had just granted a permit, which had an observatory on top, he said there was considerable waterfront there around the applicant's property, and that was sufficient reason, and that's the basis the commission did it. So given the commission's past approvals, we think it's reasonable under the circumstances to permit Mr. and Mrs. Kirkpatrick's dock house to remain in its present state under an after-the-fact permit. And I think there are unique circumstances here. This thing has existed between 30 and 35 years. 30 or 35 years ago, I was a young lawyer who hadn't even run for Commonwealth's attorney yet. I mean, that's how far this thing goes back, and I haven't been a Commonwealth's attorney for like 24 years. So that is the time limit on this particular thing. It is for private purposes and not a money-making project. We have been honest, or Mr. Kirkpatrick has been honest, they thinking not to have a permit from VMRC 35 years ago. When they thought they did have to have a permit for something, they applied for it. Then later found out they didn't have to have a permit for that project. They own a surrounding farm. This is not a lot in a residential subdivision, 560 feet of shoreline, which was a factor also in the observation building and the Fairhurst case. The creek is not otherwise used. There is no commercial crabbing, fishing, boating, commercial or pleasure, either one. We're not intruding on other permitted uses. There's been no protest. It came to light when we hired a professional licensed Class A contractor to do the work who made the application. We didn't hire Jackleg and try to evade permits or anything of that nature. Kirkpatrick's have been up front the whole time. Been no deception. There's no adverse environmental impact. There's no wetlands involved. It would be a financial hardship, obviously, to either remove it or have to alter it. They indicate $35,000 they have in it. Lord knows what it would cost to even modify it or remove it. When you look at private benefit, it's a private benefit to them, obviously, to be able to keep it. It would be one devil of a private detriment if they were forced to remove it. I look back at the Alice Siegel matter, as well as the recent action of the commission on the back deck bar, and basically Johnny the other day in the office says, well, shouldn't I be able to keep mine under those circumstances? And I couldn't say anything other than, Johnny, I agree with you. I think you probably should be able to keep yours too, especially looking at the Siegel case back in 2005. Staff report sees as an alternative. They obviously tell you that you can do it if you want to do it, but they see as an alternative keeping it as it is with a $9,000 civil charge. If that is a requirement, obviously we will simply gulp and pay it. The other alternative is the mitigation thing, even though that costs more. But we made that commitment, and we would stick with that commitment as possible mitigation. So we would respectfully ask the commission, in view of all these factors, in view of the fact it's been there over three decades, to please let the thing stay as it is.
Questions for Mr. Paulson? Hearing none, matters before the commission. I assume there's no one else here who wishes to speak to this issue. Seeing none, matter is before the commission. Mr. Shaker.
Staff and commission knows my long-standing opposition to non-water-dependent structures at the end of the piers, but state legislature has taken care of that issue and has opened this door, and here we are, getting it thrown back at us every time something happens. This is a different case than a lot of other cases, and the fact that this building has been there for such a long time, and it was not a situation where they tried to hide it from us and was unaware that anything was done wrong. And I would support them keeping the building and paying the civil fine with the condition that there would not be any cooking or overnight staying or restroom facilities in the boathouse.
Mr. Tankard?
I know the Kirkpatricks. I know them to be fair and honest business people. So if we ask them to do something, they will do it. The unique mitigation plan that the staff mentions and they have offered does seem to me something that we may should take advantage of. The derelict structure will become more derelict and more dangerous for people navigating Chesconessex Creek over time. So I pursue the same sentiments as you, Mr. Schick, but I might take them up on the offer. It may be some trouble to us to advertise in some expense, but at the same time, if you look at the slide, I don't know if you have it again, it's right there in the middle of everything. We have two municipal docks close by, and this area is known to be, at least I've fished out of here. And,
is that what you wanted?
Yes, it gives you some sense of the two different docks there, and this is sort of in the midst of them, right in the middle. I would have a preference to maybe take them up on their offer.
Well, I'd like to add something then. If council...
Were you making a motion?
Yeah, I made a motion.
Okay, I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah.
But your motion... Well, let me go back to the motion. Your motion was to...
The motion was to allow them to keep the structure with the understanding that they were not allowed to have any cooking, washing, or... overnight facilities or restroom facilities. and to pay the $9,000 civil charge. Now, in lieu of that, they could do the removal of the structure that they're requesting if there's not an issue with that with staff or council with us being able to do that. If it turns out we can't, then it would fall back on the $9,000 civil charge.
We have a motion. Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Sessions. Counselor, you want to comment on that? And then I want to hear from staff as well.
Maybe we want to hear from staff. Let's right. take a look at
Don't,
what we can and can't do.
To that option, yes.
Yeah.
I think, as Mr. Tankard said, there would be some effort associated with coordination of the removal. But I think we could probably work with Mr. Paulson on getting the proper ads in the paper. I would say that they should be responsible for probably payment of some of those things to go in the paper to advertise for anyone to come forward that might claim ownership of it. And then that would basically, from our perspective, I think, under the way the code is structured, clear the way for them to proceed with removal from our eyes now. Whether or not that totally relieves them of any liability with regard to someone that might come forward afterwards or continue to add, I don't know, but that's the intent of what that notice would be. And that was designed more for abandoned vessels, you know, mm-hmm. if someone wanted to remove one as opposed to a structure like this, but it seems like it could be done. And if they, for some reason, that ran into a glitch and did not work, then I guess we would fall back to the position that they would be agreeing, I assume, to a $9,000 civil charge if they're allowed to keep the structure.
Question, if I may, Mr. Commissioner.
Sure.
How much was it to remove the structure, John? Was it over
$10,000? $10,600 to remove the structure.
Because I'm looking at the maximum civil penalty that the commission can enforce, and it's $10,000. And I'm wondering, I'm trying to figure out whether we're really looking at this as a civil penalty or a mitigation.
The donation.
It's a donation. Well, I mean, that's one way to look at it.
Mr. Badger.
You've really got a couple things going on. You've got the pier.
Right.
Which was $1,000. And the other was $9,000, so I guess we're at $10,000 again. It's like, you know, a bunch of those numbers.
You're referring to the platform.
Well, it's $10,000 for each violation. Those would be two different violations.
Right, so in there, you're actually coming out ahead, in theory. I'm just trying to make it work.
I'm just giving legal advice here. I mean, really, it's, you know, I can understand. I'm not going there, John. But I understand the wisdom in wanting to have the abandoned crab shed removed. I'm just trying to make sure that, and obviously they agree to do that as part of the condition of the permit, after the fact permit.
We call it mitigation or whatever, it seems like to me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see any reason why the commission's jurisdiction wouldn't allow this.
Okay. The motion is silent on the pier, correct? The piece of the pier there.
Oh.
And the staff's okay. recommendation of triple permit fees and a minimal civil charge.
Well, since this will cost more than $10,000 to remove it, I guess we'll go ahead and forego the civil charges on the pier, and say yes, triple permit fees.
So you're doing triple permit fees, removal of the crab shack, unless ownership is
right.
determined. And if they decide not to do that, then they would pay
$9,000 for the building and $1,000 for the pier.
Okay.
Okay.
You clear on that, Mr. Paulson? All right. Are members clear on that?
Yeah, I think the only thing we have to explore with regard to cost would be the advertisement. And
running the local agency news, I don't recall from the code section how many times that might be done. It might just
order
be,
dinner.
Just one time. I think that's right. I just read it. And maybe they would agree to pay that, and we'll move
I
on.
I would ask that be part of the removal
yes.
Agreement.
Is that part of your motion, Mr. Schick? It is. The seconder agrees.
Yes.
All right. Any final comments on the motion?
I just want to make my comment. I think we're going to be haunted by the back deck quite some time. And Mr. Paulson needs to know, if I had my way, we would have pulled that building out by the piling. So.
Okay. Ready to vote? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries. Thank you all.